There was only one book I could read from today, really. And that is the autobiography of Joe Brown, who very sadly died yesterday. Very sad to hear his death. I mean, Joe Brown was an iconic figure. He was a hero to me and my mates in the north of England. And I think it's easy to forget just how famous people like Joe Brown and Don Willans were. You know, they were literally household names at a time when people like him were you know, heroes to us. I don't think any climber, or very few climbers anyway, today have anything like the kind of presence that he did. The important thing, I think, about guys like Don Willans and Joe Brown were that for us young lads growing up in the north of England, you know, they were one of us. They were just working class guys who started out with nothing and no money and became some of the best climbers in the world. They broke climbing away from the sort of middle class, upper class elite who had held it before then, and went on to show that just ordinary northern working guys could really climb as hard as anybody else. And, you know, that was really important. And, he, you know, my dad, who wasn't a climber, knew his name, knew something of what he'd done. And that says a lot about the stature of a guy like Joe Brown. You can't replace guys like him. So here is an extract, very kindly provided by Alex Roddy, from Joe Brown's The Hard Years. Our approach to the foot of the crocodile was made easier by the steps of a previous party leading most of the way up the steep, icy glacier. By daybreak, we were standing below the icy gully that marks the start of the difficult climbing. I was leading and drove my ice axe into the upper lip of the big crevasse defending the entrance to the gully. As I pulled on it, the shaft broke. It was ex-war department, of course. And I fell back amongst my companions. "That's a very good start, I must say," remarked Willans dryly. The other Don said that the embedded piece of axe should be good enough for hauling ourselves across the gap. And it was. Chopping steps up the icy gully, Cowie began a recitation hardly calculated to steady our nerves. He'd been in the gully a year before, when he was going up to the Rochemata route on the Aiguille de Plan. On that occasion, a block, estimated at weighing half a ton, had bounded down the gully and grazed his head. "You're making me sick," said Willans, looking around apprehensively and expecting to run for his life at any moment. Anyway, this cautionary tale spurred us to scurry up some rocks and traverse out of the danger to the foot of the East Ridge. All went well until we arrived at the hardest section of the climb. This involved climbing on pegs driven upside down into the rock. The two Dons were standing on a huge flat-top rock flake about 50 feet high. A deep subterranean crevice went behind it, while the top supplied a first-class stance. I led across the artificial pitch above the flake, finding little difficulty, and entered a groove. Then the rope stopped coming. "Hang on, the rope's jammed," shouted Cowan. 10 minutes later, they still hadn't freed it, so I climbed down to lend a hand. The rope had slipped down the crevice behind the flake. We could see it hanging down inside, but could not get it out. No amount of tugging and shaking would free it. Nearly 3 hours were lost, climbing up and down the cracks on both sides of the flake, poking the rope with axes and trying to undo the tangle. Eventually, we managed to pull it out to one side so that most of the rope, and we chopped it off to several long pieces. I could have cried. Our beautiful 300-foot rope had been reduced to 4 60-foot pieces. Tying them together, the knots caught on bits of rock all over the ridge and made it impossible to use running belays. It was very late when we reached the summit. We left almost immediately, descending on the double rope the knots interfering with the descent quite seriously, slowing us down and wearing us out. Rummaging for food in a rucksack, a torch was dropped, reducing us to two axes and one torch between three. After an eternity, we got down on the glacier. It was dark and the slopes now seemed twice as steep. After 20 hours or so of continuous climbing, fatigue must take its toll. We had attached crampons to our boots for grip on the ice. Stumbling down the glacier, Don Willens caught the crampon spikes in his flapping trousers and fell over. Within seconds, he'd knocked me over and both of us went flying down the slope. I braked to a standstill, trying to gather the rope between myself and Willens. But when the shock load came on the rope, I couldn't contain it. I was jerked off my feet again. Having slowed the slide to some extent, Cowan checked us with his rope at the expense of ripping two fingernails. Unfortunately, I collided with Willens and punctured him in the thigh with my crampons. His bruised leg looked like a nozzle of a watering can. Reorganised, we proceeded at a slower pace and reached the hut at 3:30 a.m., some 25 hours after setting out. During the last 15 minutes, I sank into hallucination. I was convinced that we were in Scotland. We were hemmed in by dark forests, and as we dragged our heavy feet up the last leg of the track to the hut, I saw myself approaching a castle. I must have been asleep on my feet and dreaming, a condition that other mountaineers have suffered after a trying day. There's no question that Cowan had been the strong man of the party. He'd kept us going. Now he sat down and fell asleep in a chair. Willens and I tottered about making a brew and soon followed his example. I woke at 3 in the afternoon, still drugged with fatigue. We ambled back to Chamonix. I had accomplished my first major alpine route, and reflecting on it over a glass of red wine in the Café National, the effort had been worth it. It's an interesting reference there to using ex-World War II equipment. A few years later than that, I was still wearing my uncle's RAF trousers. They were great, they were woolen and really warm. And it was good to know that my trousers had played, you know, some role in the downfall of Hitler. Apparently that extract is taken from the first time that Brown and Willens did some climbing in the Alps. I think they'd hitchhiked down then. I think they had 20 quid between them. Those were the days, eh? Well, I hope you enjoyed that little extract. I hope it's inspired you to maybe read the rest of the book. I just wanted to make some little tribute to Joe Brown, one of the great climbers of my generation, certainly. I've been John Burns. I'll see you again. You take care. Bye-bye.